Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, a podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Here with you every single Monday to give you your start of the week dose of rugby union from the Avicii Premiership, from the Pro 14, from all the rumours and stories that are circulating, and all from the rugby dungeon where I'm delighted to be back after the horrors of the wine region of France.
Oh, it sounded tough too.
You okay, mate?
I am all right. Do you know what? Actually, on the flight back from Lyon, the pilot last night said, "This is one of the very few times I will say this. We're travelling Manchester. Actually, the weather has been better there than it has been today." What was that like going out and in sunshine in Manchester?
It was brutal. So yeah, I woke up on Saturday morning all ready to play rugby for the mighty Didsbury Toc H,
ding,
against Wigan, and I got to the tram station, a blazing sun, 17 degrees. I did not sign up for this. Yeah. So, it's remained sunny throughout the entire day.
I remember, it must have been something like 18 or 19 degrees. Broughton Park, it was the first. This is how little sun you get in Manchester. When it's like 17, 18 degrees and sunny in the rugby season, I remember the ref stopping the game halfway through the first half and halfway through the second half for drinks breaks. 18 degrees. I can't remember. We're playing someone rubbish. It's got to come on.
Was it pre-season?
No, it was a league match in like April.
I'm trying to think which one that was.
It's probably a passive-aggressive comment about your conditioning, gents.
Yeah. Have you been able to drag yourself? Oh, no, because Phil's been moving house. Congratulations.
Thanks, mate.
You got the telly plugged in?
No, I've not got a telly plugged in, actually.
You're going to be one of those cool cord cutters.
I wouldn't say I'm a cord cutter. I still watch stuff on my laptop. But watch as much rugby as I could while moving lots of heavy boxes around. I do need your help at some point, JB, to move a fridge freezer into a cellar.
There's one thing that I'm good at, it's moving things.
Lift and shift.
Lifting
pod carrier
things.
Right there.
Yeah. But I got out to enjoy the sunshine in the new garden, which is about 10 times bigger than the old garden. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, so interesting story. Phil moved, so he's not on my travel path to and from rugby. I can't get like these awkward knocks at the door at 9 at night.
it was a lot more frequent when my old housemate used to live there.
Don't know what you're talking about, mate.
Claire's friend, my old housemate.
He was a very, very affable, good-looking chap.
Yeah, exactly. Say that. Yeah. Exactly. Made a great brew.
Exactly right.
Exactly. So on this podcast, we are obviously going to be talking about the race for the top four in the Avicii Premiership. We're going to be talking about some of the rumours, the stories that are breaking, of which there are some quite interesting, spicy ones, and anything else that crosses our mind. But the first thing I said there, which I'm sorry to burst our happy bubble, but the first thing that's going to be quite difficult, it's going to be like a breakup. I said the race for the top four in the Avicii Premiership.
Oh,
which, no.
Which will be a redundant phrase before long.
I'm it really be. Sad, because I liked calling it the Avicii. I mean, I don't know why I'm so attached to a huge multinational insurance company, but I feel or that's part of the furniture now.
Or a Swedish superstar DJ.
Yeah, and if you're new to the podcast, it was Aviva, and it was Phil's Mrs. Claire who christened it the Avicii by... was it just a pure accident?
She just said, "Are you watching the Avicii Premiership?" And I was like, "What?
Who? When?"
And it's stuck, and it's spread far beyond this podcast as well, I'm proud to say. But after the... After Aviva, we'll be stepping away from the top flight rugby union. That presents an opportunity for US firm, was it Alfred J. Gallagher.
Gallagher, yeah. So I've actually got an excerpt of an interview, an exclusive HGS interview with a leading Gallagher.
Mr. Gallagher.
Mr. Gallagher himself. Do you want to hear it?
Mr. Alfred J.
Yeah, is he talking about is he talking about the baton being passed from one from one?
Let's put it this way. There's not much love lost between these two sponsors.
Okay.
I don't know anything about Avicii. I don't wish to know anything about Avicii. It sounds like a fucking artist from the Renaissance period, doesn't it? I don't know. Is it like that David Guetta nonsense? Yeah. When that's is that the night after me or the night before? That's the night. Is it the night before me? Yeah, all right, don't worry. I can save it after that. Don't worry about that.
There we go. Mr. Gallagher himself.
Gallaghers are in the Premiership and going to save it.
Yeah, it's a dog-eat-dog world there.
Yeah, so we're going to have some sort of ceremonial goodbye to Avicii.
Yeah, and also it just isn't as cool when you're doing like we used to do music before we came online for the... for the Facebook Live people. Oh, and the VG music would just be better than Oasis music for that function.
Oh, I don't know.
We can get some good.
I used to love, when I played for Manchester Rugby Club in the good old days, used to love going, whenever we'd go down to the South or Cornwall or something, just out the changing room, blaring Oasis tunes.
Yeah.
Loved it. Let them know we're there.
Was it Flinny by any chance?
Yes, it was.
On
it
top
was.
Of that. I've Absolutely. Had a similar few experiences with Flinny.
Flinny, the Manchester pusher. That's got a stick.
And again, is anyone going to know the reference there? There's a. Has anyone found that? Is that a
real thing, isn't it?
Well, it's a real thing. So there was loads of people that were found in the canal.
Yeah. So we in Manchester have got a much higher death rate from canal deaths than any other place with equivalent waterways.
Yeah.
And some people say it's because there are no handrails. Other people think it's a serial killer, right? And like this week, someone was thrown in on a bike, was pushed in.
Yeah,
when they tried to scramble out. They were kicked back into the water. I've got my shoes wet and everything.
Good, you got those R.M. Williams, nice and waterproof.
My sturdy boots.
Yeah,
but Gallagher is here, and you wonder if this means there's more US excursions for us to go on.
Oh,
all
now,
for that.
Now you're talking, Tim.
Yeah. Well, you know who is spoken about being. I can't even say it now. Who is supposed to be going? Not this year, but next year.
Yeah, it will be in April.
Yeah,
it'll be around about this time next 2019.
Yeah,
and it will be apparently it's Quins versus Sale.
Quins versus Sale Sharks.
Interesting.
In a charter flight out?
In either Chicago.
Yes.
Or New Jersey again.
Ooh. I think I'd go Chicago this time.
Yeah. I would like to go back to
Mr.
Chicago.
Mr. Gallagher, if you're listening, if you can fix it for it to be a Chicago game, we're all over
yeah,
that.
Chicago was such good fun last time.
It was tremendous fun.
And April as well, it'll be warming up nicely. Spring will have sprung.
Ah. Those jazz clubs will be in fine form.
Exactly yeah. Right,
yeah. Right. Let's get on to some rugby action then. Well, a couple of stories, actually, because one rumour that's been breaking this evening is the rumour that next year's Gallagher Premiership new boys, Bristol, will no longer be Bristol Rugby. They will be Bristol Bears.
Well, I mean, this hasn't been confirmed by the club, but it's from a pretty reliable source. Yeah, Bristol
well,
Bears.
I mean, I would say they're often reliable, often unreliable. However, the photographic evidence of the brochure of their kit looks pretty compellingly accurate.
Mm.
I'm not sure about the kit, I have to say.
It's better than last year's efforts.
Yeah, I agree with that. But it's got like they're doing away with the blue and white hoops, if this is true, and they're going for a blue to red
fade.
It looks a little bit like the France away.
I don't like that fade.
No, I don't like any fading.
I prefer their hoops are kind of classic Bristol, aren't they? Also?
They are, but somehow I don't know how they butchered that that kit last year. I mean, was it last year? No, last time they were in the Premiership. It's just horrendous.
But we've seen the fade before with the Saracens. They had the red and black and then the grey and blue
fade.
It
just looks like they have their shorts pulled up excessively high.
Yeah.
Really great. Not cool.
But Bristol Bears, what do you think?
Okay, so I'll tell you exactly what I think, which is if you Google Bristol Bears, you get this picture. I'll find it for you now. I know we're all very, very progressive, but is it really...
Oh, I know where this is going now.
Yeah, this is an actual thing. So Bristol Bears, the Bristol Bear Fiesta is It's a fiesta for gay men to meet on the beach.
Well, no, not well, yeah, gay men. But,
yeah, no, it actually says gays only, mate. It says
it's particularly celebrating the larger, hairier gay men. I don't know if I'm down with my lingo. Is that right?
Yeah, I guess it's better than the Bristol Twinks, isn't it? So, I mean, I just don't. Why? Why
it's also story? Bristol Bears is also the name of the Bristol wheelchair rugby side.
It's just such a... It's ridiculous. I mean, there's no heritage with Bears. I mean, literally, one of the first things that I thought of was that, you know, using it in the term which Tim has just mentioned. I don't know why you'd do it.
Me neither, to be honest.
Well, I mean... So, I was looking at this.
Here's their badge.
Oh, yeah, it's just a Bears head.
Just a Bears head. Just a normal...
It's like Chicago Bears, right? Oh, no, yeah, that's the C. Chicago have the bear and the C.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
It's pretty much like that. So I was looking at it, and I get it from a marketing point of view. I get it.
Oh, yeah, because Bears sell so much better than Bristol RFC.
Because I don't actually get it from a marketing. No. What is wrong with Bristol Rugby?
Yeah. And also, here's the other thing. Have they not used Google before rebranding? I mean, have they just gone to the most naive... Have they used, like, I don't know, some sort of like Mormon advertising agency, which wouldn't have any clue about this.
Well,
so I get having a mascot and a brand.
By the way, that has been their mascot this year. Brizzly Bear is their mascot.
Right.
So I wonder if they got the idea from that, or whether it was like this year we'll do the mascot, and next year we'll do the rebrand.
Well, so I don't mind that. Having the mascot is fine. Having Brizzly Bear. It's quite a clever name for a mascot.
It's so stupid.
But I don't get changing the name from Bristol Rugby with a bear mascot.
All mascots to
Bristol Bears.
All mascots are stupid.
I quite like mascots.
But then by that...
I mean, they are inherently stupid. They're for kids. But they're quite. They can
them.
Be quite entertaining.
Do they like them?
They do. I've got one... years ago when I was the Sale... match day host thing, pitch announcer, you used to like welcome on Sharky. Well, please welcome, ladies and gentlemen, Sharky. And all the kids would scream. They all want to get their picture taken with him.
Sharky, and what's the other one called?
Finley,
that's it.
Okay, well.
I'm getting this. I get it from a marketing point of view. The old fashioned rugby badges, though I love them, do look old fashioned.
Good.
And. Yeah, I know, but I guess actually they don't need to get the old-fashioned fans. They don't need to convince them to come to Bristol. They're not going to stop coming because they've got a bear badge on there instead of the old one with the horses and the whatever else it is on that Bristol.
Yeah,
badge.
Unicorns, yeah. Serpent, and Scales of Justice.
Yeah,
well, so over the top, isn't it?
And but... some kind of castle.
Scales of Justice. Are you a rugby club?
But in the Avicii Premiership, we have the Tigers. Now, I think that's a good example. You look at their badge. The Leicester badge has changed significantly.
It has. Not for the better, I might add.
Well, you could definitely argue that. But what I like about that is Tigers was a nickname for them long before the rebrand. It came out of somewhere.
Wasn't it something to do with India?
I don't know. Was it just the stripes, the colours and the stripes?
Yeah.
I've got a feeling it's something to do with...
Mate, you might be right. I don't know. Tigers fans, help us out.
So on that, you've got the new Tigers head badge, and then you've got the old crest with...
Lovely. That's more like it.
Two tigers, a dragon, a knight helmet.
Yeah.
White rose, interestingly.
When you start looking at the badges more closely, you realise how brilliant they are.
Yeah.
And,
you know, these new ones. So here's the thing to cause outrage across the land. It's not only Bristol doing this. Allegedly Gloucester are going to do it too. They're going to be the Gloucester Lions.
I was going to say, because there's only two left, because we've got Tigers, if this happens, Bears, Sharks, Falcons and Wasps. They're the animal ones.
Mm-hmm.
Chiefs, Warriors, Saracens. They're the fighty types.
Yep.
And then you've got...
No. They're the cultural appropriation ones, mate.
And then... Well, apparently Saracens was to do with...
The Crusades.
But it was because their rival club were... The
Knights or...
The Knights, something like that.
Well, that makes sense.
Crusaders.
Or Freemasonry.
Was it Lions? No, I don't know.
Was it Knights Templar that went off against...
There's some reason why Saracens are Saracens, and it's to do with they were the rival club of another team who were called, and I think it was like the Saracens and the Crusaders. It was something like that.
That makes sense. Well, there are Saracens and Crusaders in Bristol. I'm sure there's Bristol Saracens. Yeah, there is definitely Bristol Saracens, and there's Dings Crusaders.
And then the other three we have are Quins, Saints, and again, Saints was the nickname which was, they were known as that for years and years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Irish.
Yeah, Quins, Saints, Irish.
The only two we haven't got are Gloucester and Bath. You say Gloucester are going to do this, are they? Gloucester do Gibbons?
just going back to the you said you had the fighty types, the Saracens, the Chiefs,
and Warriors.
Warriors, and then the non-fighty types, the Saints, the Harlequins, and the Irish. But do the Irish not cross both both categories?
Careful, careful. Be very careful. I was thinking of so the best badge I think is actually the Hartlepool badge. Have you seen that?
I have seen it, but I can't remember.
Are they still a club?
I don't know.
West Hartlepool.
Yeah, there'll still be a.
There is their badge is a hanging monkey.
Oh, the monkey hangers. That's right.
No, I don't know if it's still the still a hanging monkey, but it definitely used to be that.
But the hanging monkey story was. What happened?
So the story that I've been told, whether this is right or wrong,
monkeys got imported or something.
No. So it was a ship that was had lost its crew for whatever reason. There was a monkey on board. It washed up in Hartlepool, and no one from Hartlepool had ever seen a Frenchman before. So they assumed the monkey was what French people look like, and hanged. And because it couldn't speak English, that confirmed.
It's definitely French. It's French.
That confirmed it was French. So they hanged the monkey as a French invader.
Bloody hell! And if it was like,
no, that is probably complete nonsense. So please write to us at Rugby Podcast and correct that.
So what are Gloucester going to be then? Do you know?
Lions.
Gloucester Lions.
Yeah, that's a little. So I wonder, right, Lions. If. Some of this has got to do with our first story, which is Gallagher and
America.
The Americanization. You know, easy to understand franchises, that kind of thing.
Mm.
Because, you know, it'd be a lot easier to sell the Bristol Bears to an American audience rather than the Scales of Justice, a castle, an emu, and whatever else is on the badge.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Well, that's what I think. There's more people that aren't current rugby fans that these clubs want to get on board, and the image of rugby as stuffy, upper class, old fashioned.
All the things we like,
which are elements we love.
inaccessible, elitist.
But I think, and I understand it, I think it might make it more accessible for some. It will definitely be unpalatable for many.
Yeah, and it's kind of unpalatable for me in the same way that. Like English rugby wants to be accessible, and it doesn't work. You know, they start up a community thing called Hits. It's just they put like a Z on the end of it. It's just patronising nonsense. And then they do the whole stadium with this urban font. I mean, why? No one's convinced that you've graffitied your stadium to say World Cup 2018 or whatever it is.
England have something, don't they? As well, like there's an England rugby one, and there's something else like another statement.
Yeah, with the hashtag.
Yeah.
But carry them home.
Like, yeah, that kind of thing where it's just been graffitied on the wall.
So stupid.
Like, might as well do it in Comic Sans.
Times New Roman, please.
So if that's right and Gloucester do it, then the only club that don't have one is Bath. So I was thinking, what would they be? Because the obvious one would be Bath Romans.
Yeah, it would.
But then I don't know if that makes you feel of like orgies rather than the Warriors.
The Ulster Romans. or the Lions, because their mascot is actually a lion.
It's actually a lion.
Well, he's a lion dressed as a Roman,
mm.
Which is an interesting combination.
It is, isn't it? There's all sorts going on there.
It's a tough creature to deal with.
Yes.
It's an armour-clad lion with a sword and a shield.
Frenchman.
Maybe that's why Gloucester are going first. They're just going, there's only so many apex predators left. Let's get one.
Yeah. That's a good point, which apex predators are left for the clubs to choose from.
There's not many, is
Eagles?
There?
Eagles? Yeah.
Eagles, yeah.
Bath Eagles?
Bath Eagles. Mm.
No. They should stay as Bath. It's
quite fitting that Bath are the last club to have a nickname. I like that. That makes me.
Yeah.
That's the most Bath thing to do, to defy the nickname thing.
Mm.
Good.
Here we go. List of apex predators beginning with B. Black-headed bushmaster. A blood.
Is that not a? That's a Pokemon, right?
A blood python.
Ooh, the Bath blood pythons.
Bornean.
Hang on,
clouded
isn't
leopard.
A blood python like a euphemism?
Surely.
Well, it would fit right in with the Bristol Bears.
Bears versus blood pythons. What will happen? Oh, we know what's going to happen. We know exactly what's going to happen.
Bornean clouded leopard, brown bear, Burmese python. Another euphemism.
Right. Enough. We're 90 minutes in. We've not discussed
right,
a
no.
stitch of rugby.
Right. Well, let's
well done. Well done, guys. Good podding.
Let's do a little bit of that then. So the it's all about that. This is the most exciting crescendo to an Avicii season I can remember.
Yes,
it's very, very good.
It's the same teams in similar positions for the top three, at least.
They seem to have all got there through a completely different route, though.
Yeah, and yet there's still so much on the line.
Mm. Yeah, well, it's because it's so close from three down to seventh. Really, are all still in the game, still in the hunt?
Yeah, just super
well,
close.
All to play for.
And some of the fixtures coming up as well, because of course Leicester have Newcastle next week. I mean, surely that's going to pretty much seal it, right?
Well,
Newcastle win seals it for them.
Yeah, go on then. So we'll get into next week's games in a second. But I've
well,
just,
not next week's, the week after.
Week
games.
After, sorry, in two yep. weeks they get back. So I've just on the back of a scrap bit of paper here, I've scribbled out how it's going to finish. So Exeter currently have 75 points.
Yep.
They play Sale at home in round 21.
Yeah,
I've got them winning 5 points in that, and they play Quins away in the last game. I've got them winning 4 points in that,
which
means Exeter will finish the league season on 81 points in first position. Saracens currently on 67. Go away to Irish, they'll get full 5 points, and they're home to Gloucester, they'll get the full 5 points. 77 points they finish on in second. Wasps 61 points. Home to Northampton, that'll be a 4 point win.
Yeah.
They're away to Newcastle. I've got them losing with a bonus point. 66 points.
Yeah, I can go with
that.
Newcastle are on 59. They have Leicester away. I have Newcastle getting 1 point.
Ooh. Yeah.
And Wasps winning with 4 points at the end of the season. 64 points. Leicester, currently on 57, will beat Newcastle in 2 weeks' time. 4 points. They've still... I still think Leicester, they might well end the season thinking, if we manage to convert a couple of those 4 point wins into 5 point wins, they've got the lowest number of bonus points, I think.
Oh, okay.
Certainly of the top sides.
They have. They're equal with Worcester in terms of bonus points, as seven as joint last.
Yeah, and Sale away, 1 point they'll get from that, meaning Leicester will finish fifth with 62 points. Gloucester will beat Bath, 4 points, lose to Saracens, 0 points, and will finish sixth. And Sale will lose to Exeter with 0 points, beat Leicester, and sixth with 58 points. That's how it's finishing. Hear me now, believe me later.
Ooh, so Newcastle make the top four.
I think so. I'm not with Tim on this. I think Newcastle could and probably will win against Leicester next week.
Well, the Leicester... So it's at Welford Road. Obviously, the performance from Leicester at Welford Road left a little bit to be desired.
It did!
And they really
did.
They had a lot of territory and a lot of possession. They were dominant, but they couldn't execute, and they gave away some really soft tries.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of discrediting Northampton there, because they were very good and they're probably the best game I've seen them play all season.
And if you were a Saints fan, would that will in the very short term, that will mean you had a very good weekend. You did the double over Leicester, win at Welford Road, brilliant. Let's have an open top bus tour down the Wellingborough Road for that alone. But then also, you're saying, well, you just did that.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's who they did it with. That's the important part, because there was no Hartley, there was no Jamal Ford Robinson, there was no, I don't think Brooks played.
Paul Hill started.
Yeah, there's no Laws. They had basically a whole team out not playing, or a whole pack. So it was a very impressive win.
It was a very impressive win. And so I was watching this. This was the one game I kind of watched live while I was building some furniture. Their captain, Rob Horn, mm-hmm. on the day, one of their best players all season. In fact, I'd probably go as far as to say their best.
Their only good player.
No, I wouldn't say that, but their best and most consistent. Because someone like Courtney Laws has been amazing at times, but he's been unavailable.
Usually not in a Northampton shirt, to be fair.
Oh, he played some great stuff earlier in the season. But yeah, not consistently. But Rob Horn, captain on the day, one of the best players. The very first interaction of the game,
yeah, you're right.
He knocked himself out. The very first, the second, so I thought, that is it. Like, the guy who was clearly wanting to lead from the front went in for a big hit on Callum Afoni, got his head slightly in the wrong place, and was taken to hospital, which is
awful. He's still there now.
Awful, awful injury, it looked like.
Yeah, so, it was described as a serious head injury.
Yeah.
Northampton have released a statement, I believe, saying it's an arm injury.
I think it could be both.
By the way, on that one, Cipriani played this weekend.
Yeah. He's fine, wasn't he, mate?
Yeah.
That was phenomenal. And Wasps said, as quite rightly, that their players will, as they will, of course, go through the full protocol. So he was fine. But he looked in a really bad way. So equally, I hope Rob Horn is equally as okay as Cipriani.
Yeah. Well, that's a really good example, I guess, of the inconsistency of concussion. Because you've got some people some incidents where you can recover almost immediately from it, and others where you've got someone, just this week it's been reported of Dylan Hartley, who's still getting recurring symptoms from the England Ireland game.
Really?
Yeah, which was a month ago.
What the hell? Let's talk about a different game.
Okay.
Let's talk about, let's talk about a game which really meant a lot. Did anyone see Leinster Treviso?
I didn't see
Here
it.
We go.
I saw the Leinster team, which even though they rested an entire 23, it was still a superb side.
Yeah.
It's frightening.
It was the very definition of a second team.
It was.
It's still, as we've said before, Leinster can field two second teams. Or two teams that have international calibre. And so let's take nothing away from Benetton.
No, absolutely.
To go to JB's beloved Benetton, to give them
full
title. To go to Dublin is never an easy place to travel to.
It was brilliant seeing how much it meant to them, the way they reacted at the final whistle.
Well, apparently, one of the biggest days at the club ever was narrowly losing to Toulon. So to go to Dublin and get a win,
that's
huge.
Unless they have a sniff at a decent league finish, right? It's them or Ulster?
Kind of. So the situation is they're the first Italian team to beat Leinster at their home ground. It's the first time that an Italian team has broken the 50-point barrier in Pro 12, Pro 14. And it's the first time that they've won more than 10 games in a season.
Yeah. I keep meaning to look back. I wonder how many seasons you'd have to add together of Benetton playing in the Pro 14, Pro 12, as it was, for them to get to 11 wins.
Quite a few. And I don't think they're done yet. I think they've got one more game. Now, I'm confused about about European qualification. They do automatically go through to the Champions Cup, don't they? Because they're one of two.
No, not anymore.
It's changed this year. There was complaints about, because they were kind of weakening one of the groups. Historically, I might add.
Yeah.
So they've changed it. So it is the top in order. So there's no guaranteed spots for anyone.
Yeah, that's a shame. That's a real shame.
Well, it will mean that you won't get a you shouldn't get a situation where one pool in the Champions Cup is, you sort of hope to be in the Italian side's pool.
You do.
Yeah. But although it didn't work out for, did we get two this year?
Was it Scarlet? It was Scarlet's Bath and Toulon. But so Toulon and Scarlet's both came. So again, two sides came out of the Italian.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't do so well in Europe if you just look at the points. But they were seconds away from beating both Toulon and Scarlet's. Yeah. Bath failed to get a bonus
point at home.
At home. So they really are a good team.
It does. I'm glad it's a meritocracy. And if Benetton earn the right to be there, then they've earned the right to be there.
Definitely. Yeah, I didn't realise it had changed, actually.
Definitely. And they're still in European competition.
Yeah. And to be honest, it might actually be a better thing. We were only speaking last week or 2 weeks ago about the difficulty of playing in Europe and how demoralising it is. Europe. Playing in the Champions Cup, how demoralising it is for your team to be travelling to Clermont or La Rochelle or Toulon.
Particularly if you get a bad seed.
Oh, yeah.
If you're not really quite good enough to be there,
yeah,
and then you're the last seed. You get the group of death.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. So it might be a blessing in disguise that.
And part of the reason Benetton might not manage to make a playoff spot will be because there's been a mini resurgence at Ulster.
Well, two games on the bounce.
Yeah,
it's better than we've done for a while. I haven't actually looked back to see the highlights of the Ulster's incredible 8-0 victory over the Ospreys with a penalty in the first 5 minutes.
Who played number six for Ospreys? You know?
I don't know.
Do you know?
No.
Alan Wynne Jones.
Did he?
Yep. First time in a decade that he's played six.
Wow. Fair play.
Yeah. This was one to miss.
Yeah. First 5 minutes score a penalty. Last 5 minutes score a try. That's it. No scoring. Apparently, it wasn't a bad game. But I've not caught up on the highlights because I imagine they'd be quite
short. Jim Mallander rumoured to be going to Ospreys.
No, to Ulster.
To Ulster. He's linked to that one as well now.
Is he? So I've heard the rumour of him to Ulster.
I heard the one of him to Ospreys. But it would be again, I'm only just seeing what I've read elsewhere. There's no personal insight at all.
So it'd be utterly insane, right, if Ireland, with all their coaching talent, and they've got loads of it, and all their talent, go and pick an Englishman for the Ulster job. In the same way, it was insane that they appointed Les Kiss
right? And John O'Gibbs.
Go and promote someone.
If it had been another year down the line, or maybe 2 years down the line, Ronan O'Gara.
Yep.
He's got to be the next head coach.
I bet Ulster probably would have, or certainly individuals would have looked at pushing him to that. I think it's right for him not to look for it yet.
Mm.
I think he wants to. He's doing it exactly the right way.
I'm not saying he couldn't turn it around. He's also not the sort of coach that they need. He also needs someone like a Richard Cockerell type director of rugby, rather than Ronan O'Gara.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Cocker's done a great job at Edinburgh.
And it's not like Ulster can't play rugby. They need hard forwards, and maybe they need a little bit of an attitude change.
Then maybe Mallander's not that bad. Maybe Mallander just became stale.
And now Dorian West is available too.
No.
West and Mallander.
No. Give me the two Mallanders. I'll take them.
Wow.
I'll take Harry.
But in the same vein, it would be insane if Wales decide to go and appoint a Kiwi or some such thing for the Ospreys job. I mean, there are very few Welsh coaches.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, come to think of it, who was the guy taking over Cardiff? Is he Welsh? I'm sure he's got an Australian background.
I couldn't even tell you who's taking
So obviously Pibbock is
Kiwi.
Yeah.
And you've got Chapman, who's Irish.
Mm. Yeah.
And Chapman might be a guy to go for Ulster.
Not so sure.
I think he's all right.
That's interesting. So how many English coaches are there, directors of rugby or head coaches, whatever the role is, in the Avicii Premiership now? Three, isn't there?
Yeah.
Dimes, Baxter, and Dean Richards.
Kingston?
I was going to say, Harlequins don't have one, but it was Kingston, and I assume, unless Nick Evans or Adam Jones has taken that role, it'll be Rowntree or Easter or Mapletoff.
I don't really have as much of a problem.
Unless he's gone as well.
I don't really have as much of a problem with Premiership clubs appointing foreign directors of rugby, because the Premiership clubs are independent entities,
yes.
Whereas the regions and the provinces, they're just pathways up to international teams.
I agree, and I the coaching pathway is an important one. It's an interesting balancing act because you also know that look at Scarlets. Would Wales have been looking as rosy as they are now with the World Cup just over a year away were it not for Scarlets, which has been masterminded by Wayne Pivak?
Yep.
Yep.
And then implemented by the excellent Warren Gatland. I mean,
and you have got Wayne Pivak, very experienced, very good, and you've got Stephen Jones, Mark Taylor, both working.
So I think the reason that Wales do this with the New Zealand coaches is because the Welsh playing rugby and coaching rugby in Wales is so toxic. The environment is so toxic. They just get somebody from outside, from outside the area, completely clean slate, and let them get on with it.
Yeah, and a very important thing for the national team. If you're only focused on national team, you do need strong regions.
Mm.
It's going to be interesting. So, going back to your beloved Benetton, The stronger that those Italian teams get, the better it's got to be for Italian rugby.
Like, there's no pathway for all the clubs around Benetton to feed into Benetton. There was very little pathway before, well, to get to Benetton up to the national team. There's not much communication.
Now, as soon as you get that, that consistency and that quality of coaching and new ideas and players experiencing new ideas, new ways of doing things, exactly like Pivac at Scarlets.
Pivac! I always think of the friends.
But it's a pivot,
And Jonathan Spratt, of course.
But it's good. And do you know what? It's good for English rugby. If Jim Mallinder goes to Ulster, Richard Cockerell's at Edinburgh, that's great for England's prospects.
And Stuart Lancaster, obviously.
Stuart Lancaster in Dublin.
And Andy Farrell, of course, you say him.
Andy Farrell.
So these guys are going to come back across the water at some point.
They're going to come back.
Sean is another one who's obviously with Wales at the moment. He's been name checked.
Do you think he can be a head man? I know he was head coach of Wasps, wasn't he?
Didn't he win European Cup 2007?
Was that
Wasps?
Not with Gatland?
Yeah, I think he won it again with Sean Edwards.
Yeah, so I can never really get what goes on there. It's always been like Sean Edwards has been number two to Gatland. Obviously,
he probably was still Gatland's team, Gatland's mould with Sean Edwards in
head
charge.
Coach, maybe,
but then when Gatland went, I'm sure Sean Edwards carried on as coach.
Maybe. So all these guys, the lure of that rose is going to be too great for them to stay away for too long. So brilliant. I think it's all good. On that one, just staying in Ireland, a brief mention of Ulster releasing Paddy Jackson and Stuart Olding. It got reported in some places as sacked, but that's an unfair... No,
the terminology I read, I did see sacked somewhere. I think it was in the Independent. Their contracts were revoked.
Sounds like sacking to me.
I imagine they've been paid up to the end, and they've just said you can go now.
I'm not sure.
It might not have been, because if it's there will be. So having
gross misconduct. I mean,
there will be some pretty stringent rules within the contracts, professional contracts around their conduct.
Yeah, so that's fair.
I would imagine this would breach that and their contracts can be terminated.
I also imagine Bank of Ulster, was it Bank of Ireland?
Wouldn't
have wanted to be associated. Money talks in these situations.
Apparently both of those had a real say in this, which is a little bit worrying, actually.
Well, now, originally I was kind of against... I was very much for those two not playing for Ulster. As an Ulster fan, Paddy Jackson is the best 10. He's the second best 10 in Ireland. He was the best 10 in Northern Ireland, certainly. But I was still very much... There's been too much... Too many issues and too much water under the bridge for those two to play for Ulster again. So I was very much for them getting out. I was originally not for the club sacking them. But kind of the point that you made, Jay, about they have brought the club and the game into disrepute. Whether they originally intended those WhatsApp messages to be private, unfortunately, they were not. Everything came out, and I think it's the right thing for both Ireland, Ulster, and I actually think it's the right thing for the players. So,
and according to the Times, Paddy Jackson to Claremont.
Which is,
from a rugby point of view, fantastic.
Yeah,
from a money point of view, even better. he's going to pick up some serious cash.
Yeah, and from Claremont's perspective,
everyone
in from those isolated stakeholders wins.
Yeah, I mean, here you go. You get a 28-year-old international fly half.
I think he's younger than that as well.
He's 26.
You know what's frightening? George North had his 26th birthday this week.
I know.
Happy birthday, George.
Only 26.
Over 70 caps.
Incredible.
Yeah, so you get a fly-off, international class, young, and guess what? He doesn't leave for the international period.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
An Olding, you think, to...
He doesn't even want to go home. He's not going to get homesick.
Last place he wants to go.
He's going to make a new life for himself. Yeah, 26. He turned 26 3 months ago.
Now, I was quite surprised to see this. Some people have suggested Stuart Olding has been linked with the Chiefs.
So I think the one that makes sense is Paddy Jackson to Chiefs. And if Exeter want a wholesome... Ulster want a wholesome good guy to steer the ship for a couple of years till they sort it out, they take Steenson.
It's
a dream move for everyone.
That's not a bad shout. The problem is Baxter's wholesome image.
Well, yeah. Well, also, you know, Steenson's kind of lost his job at the moment. To Simmons.
Yeah.
So you're going forward with Simmons with the insurance policy of Jackson. That'd be a great move.
But equally, like exactly as you mentioned, the due diligence and everything and that Rob Baxter takes and how seriously he regards the way that the club is viewed.
Yeah.
I was really surprised to see Stuart Olding linked with him.
Yeah, I mean, they don't care that much, do they? Because they get all sorts of flack for being called the Chiefs and they carry on regardless. You know, so...
But that's nonsense.
That is nonsense.
It's hilariously nonsense, as are the people that cite these arguments. the other club is Sale.
For Olding.
For Olding, I think.
Olding would be a good signing for anyone.
Yeah.
I kind of think, again, for the players, they're better getting out of the English-speaking world.
Completely
agree. Japan or somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's South Africa?
Jaguars?
Imagine. I would pay to play at Jaguars.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Jaguars, you pay us, yeah.
Jaguars who beat early season leaders, the Rebels, in Australia this weekend.
We thought the Aussie resurgence was on, but... Yeah, maybe not.
Rattling off again.
Flattered to deceive.
Yes.
Who saw the Sale game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched
the full highlights. I only watched the second half live.
That's got to be game of the season. I mean, it's right up there.
It was enthralling. It was another thing, just to confirm, anyone who's going away at any point, the BT Sport app works abroad.
Yeah.
For live games.
That's a gem.
You can't watch like video content.
Should you have said that? Because what if there's a bug and they now close that bug? They now close that loophole?
Oh, no, they wouldn't have overlooked that. But anyway, maybe it's just in the EU. I don't know, but you can watch the live game on the app, which is outstanding.
Yeah.
The amount of times that I need to watch rugby and I can't because I'm in some tin pot country. And the thing is, like, it's not like...
All right, Donald Trump.
Yeah. No. But what gets me is it's not like it's widely available and I'm ripping someone off. I would happily pay a tenner.
Yeah, I know.
And you can't find it for level money, and then it's restricted.
So, my dad, this is last year, his Sky, he wanted to watch, I think it was a United game, he wanted to watch it, and they only had it viewer to one box. They had two Sky boxes, but they had sports set up on one box.
Yeah.
And that box was out of action. And after an angry phone call, he couldn't get them to transfer it across on the other box in time, so he paid for an entire 12 month contract to get it set up. That was the only way. So
do you not get a call off period or something that you can?
Well, yes.
Yeah.
So he paid what he thought was going to end up being, like, I don't know, 500 quid because it was a 12 month full contract on this other box. And I was kind of very quickly, when I found this out the next day, explained that, well, you could have just logged in on your computer to watch it. So I'll do that now so that's set up. And also, there is no way that whoever at Sky has sold you this has done this correctly.
Exactly.
Because they are trying to absolutely fleece you for 500 quid.
Yeah, so when I'm abroad, it is almost a case, I'm not saying money's no object, but it's a very little consideration. I'd pay a lot of money to.
You're in that holiday mode anyway, aren't you? You're spending money. Oh, ten quid for a cocktail, whatever.
Exactly. I'd probably pay up to 30 quid to watch a game.
Well, it's kind of what we normally do if we go to a pub.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll spend. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
So that's my point.
I wonder how it works for rugby fans in America who want to go and watch it at a pub, because not only do they have the money for the beers, but there's cover charges whenever they play rugby.
Is it?
Do you remember when we went to watch international games? Yes.
When we watched England, Wales, there was.
There was for the international.
20 quid cover.
We watched, no NBC we, do it. Probably there isn't.
We watched, it was Ulster Scarlets at like 3 p.m. on a Friday afternoon in an Irish bar in Manhattan.
Of course, it was the evening.
Manhattan.
What a day. What a day that was.
It was a good day, that.
So, anyway.
That was when we played for the Bombers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was the day.
I've lost my train of thought. Yes, let's talk about Sale versus
Newcastle. The other big game. So Leicester had a gilt-edged opportunity to really take a massive step towards top four. They didn't. Newcastle held their nerve.
What a
fantastic game! I mean, on the one hand, it was a heroic comeback from Sale, but they lost that game with an abject 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Which was almost the same as Wasps game.
It was very similar to the Wasps game.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what I really think happened. Not so much that Sale threw it away. I think Newcastle are mighty impressive going forward. And particularly in that first 20. And I think maybe they're too impressive. And the stats sort of bear that out, which is they score a lot of their points early on, and then the second half they pretty much collapse in point scoring.
In terms of when points are scored, Sale, more than any other team, scored just before or just after half time.
Which is a good place to score.
Interesting, yeah.
Mm. That's the other story. Gary Graham, what a player.
Yeah, fair enough.
We
take it all back, Eddie.
Yeah. Well, this is what Eddie Jones is very good at. He's picking guys.
Identifying talent.
Yeah, he picks guys out of, you know, from obscurity.
Yeah, Jack Maunder. For every Gary Graham, there's a Jack Maunder.
Yep. Yeah. Well, you know, he gave Matt Gitter his debut before he played a club game. Yeah, and he didn't turn out too bad.
Yeah,
Magic Marcus, he saw as a 15-year-old.
Yeah, 15-year-old. And he's probably the best player of a generation. Certainly of his generation.
So Gary Graham, yeah, I mean, looked like a seasoned Avicii player, when it's only like, what, half a dozen starts in the Premiership or something?
I think that might
since
be like his fourth start or something.
From Jersey, wasn't it?
Yeah, Jersey.
So he looks a proper player. He
played brilliantly. He's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
I did feel sorry for Paolo Adogwu when he had to tackle Callum Green.
Callum Green, yeah.
Oof, that was a horrible...
5 yards out, yeah. There was no way.
Falling over second row.
Yeah.
He had a bad 10 minutes, you could say.
So I've just looked up, actually. So Russ Petty on Twitter, he did, a couple of weeks ago, first half, second half, winning within the Premiership. So this doesn't include that last game. Mm-hmm. But Newcastle have won 11 of the first halves, only won 4 of the second halves.
Interesting.
So it does show how they come out of the blocks firing and then tire.
Now, I don't know if it's a fitness problem, or if it's a case that they play so fast and so loose to start with. I mean, it could be a bit of both, actually.
Yeah. With that kind of correlation, I'd put it down to fitness. Yeah.
I'll also say, if Joel Hodgson had his kicking boots on, they'd have been out of sight.
Yeah.
That is very, very true. There again, I never felt particularly bothered watching the Newcastle game, because they are susceptible to big carriers. And Sale have got a lot of big carriers, particularly in the back row. And if you're going to beat Newcastle going into the playoffs, I mean, they would have a nightmare against Saracens. I think they could take Wasps, but Saracens Exeter are going to absolutely chew them up.
Yeah, Saracens
away.
Exeter. Well, yeah, this is... So, someone actually commented on Twitter to us today. Is there almost no point in having the semi-finals in the Avicii Premiership? Because Exeter and Saracens, whoever they play... At Sandy Park and the Aviva.
Yeah, yes. Including Saracens themselves when...
Yeah.
Exeter beat them.
Yeah.
Has any team ever won it from fourth?
Saracens did a few years ago when Bath finished top, didn't they?
Yes, you're right.
Did they?
I'm sure they did.
Bloody hell. So, yeah, the answer is...
Or Bath finished second. Yeah, 2015, I want to say.
Yeah, so the answer is yes, there is a point in doing it then.
Let me just check that. But yeah, yeah.
I certainly think there's less teams that have won it from first than haven't.
Yeah, probably. Well, it makes sense. They're the best teams.
Or have won it from below first.
Mm. Less teams that have won from below first.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Well, I suppose there's three teams for starters, which is going to... I don't know what statistical... I don't know. I don't know.
So, 2015 was when Saracens beat Bath in the final. And let me just get the table up. Saracens finished fourth. So Northampton finished top of the table in 2015.
Is that right?
Wow.
God, what a fall. So Northampton, Bath, Leicester, 1, 2, 3. None of those, possibly Leicester, but certainly Bath and Northampton are not even close.
Well, wasn't it interesting listening to, what's his name's comments in the press this week?
Tom Wood.
He said that they down tools. I mean, I understand downing tools for... a week, but since 2015, down tools in 2015.
Speaking of another club that have down tools,
oh my word,
Can I go on to Harlequins?
You can, yeah, after I tell you that I spoke to Steve Diamond for an hour on Tuesday.
Okay.
So I've just got this one little thing to talk about. One of the things Diamond was talking about was the academy kids coming through.
Okay.
So we've got 140 clubs in this area, which are all linked into Sale.
So that's basically every club in the northwest, really.
Pretty much, yeah. It's one of the most rugby dense areas in the country.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're so confident about these lads coming through, they are considering what the future might be like for a transfer market for lads that they produce.
Okay.
Does that make sense? So basically training them up, doing some sort of apprenticeship style thing, and then selling them to other people.
Wow. Well, so I know that Sale introduced something a couple of years ago where they had players signed up when they're about 16. That, so say you're playing for, I don't know, Fylde or Preston Grasshoppers.
Yeah.
You sign a very small contract with Sale when you're 16. If you go on to make a first team appearance for Sale, then your home club get, I can't remember,
five
or £10,000. So you're kind of, you're incentivized to do something good for your club by sticking with Sale.
Yeah, that is exactly right.
It seemed like quite a good little system, that.
But they used to.
Yeah, actually, do you know what? When I think disproportionately more England internationals have come from Lancashire as a county.
Loads.
Tons. And with no one else around them, Newcastle in the northeast, which is less of a hub, but still has some rugby areas.
Yeah.
But particularly the northwest, well, there's no contest. Whereas I know that the battlegrounds that have been drawn in the East Midlands around the London area, exactly, the battle lines that are drawn around who gets what and which school, and they've just got free reign. So, yeah.
Yeah. Can do what they want. The other thing was, oh, just about squad sizes. So yeah, we can crack on.
Well, yeah, let's go on to another club that develops homegrown talent. Quins, and a club that for me seemed to have completely down tools. Now, I was expecting, so you often get the kind of,
I thought it was going to be a backlash this week.
The DOR bounce, if someone goes, players were obviously unhappy for one reason or another under Kingston, and there's probably lots and lots of different reasons. But those reasons don't seem to have disappeared, because players, purely based on that performance, are still significantly unhappy.
Look, they lack heart. They lack endeavour. They don't like each other as a group. I mean, there's disharmony.
That's where I am, because you kind of think if everyone was focused on Kingston and Kingston was causing all sorts of ructions, you take him away, everything else will at least superficially for the first few weeks, months, will seem rosy.
Yeah,
you've taken him away, and everything based on that performance, everything is still as bad as it was 2 weeks ago, a week ago, a month ago. So it's not, this problem is more deep-seated than just
it's
Kingston.
It's probably exacerbated it, because there'll be guys in that changing room who think Kingston shouldn't have gone.
Yeah, probably.
It's probably going to fracture the team even more. It doesn't matter at this point, because they can't go down. But yeah, it's pathetic, actually.
Well, I just look at it and think, what would all those Quins players should just almost go, what would Chris Robshaw do?
Almost.
Just.
So I would get rid of them all. Personally, I would keep Lang, and I'd keep
Magic Marcus.
I might keep Kerr and Robshaw as well for the transition. Just blow it all up and start again. But do you know what the real shame is? The real shame is they've done everything right. Like, they've brought all their lads through from like a young age.
Yeah.
So many academy products. They tried to do the right thing by promoting from within, coaching up their own coaches, and it's gone wrong, and that's the saddest part of the whole thing.
They gave Marla a couple of chances, but then made an example of him.
Yeah,
isn't Marla Yard? Yep. A couple of examples and made a couple of chances and made an example.
Yeah, brilliant.
Of him.
That's kind of what you want.
They've done nothing really wrong, and yet it's somehow such a disaster.
So it seems like they're, and this is me with absolutely no knowledge, but kind of what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing is there's a couple of cliques, or maybe several cliques within the squad.
Yeah.
So what you need to do is kind of draw out the gang lines, look at the cliques, and then do a cost-benefit analysis of each one of those cliques. How much are we paying them?
Yep,
how
good.
Talented are they? How long of the season are they going to be missing for internationals? Because there's a lot of internationals within that squad. And then kind of, you almost got to cut off one or two of the cliques. Just let them go and start again with those groups.
So weirdly, what I heard it is the cliques are based on the age groups that they came through the academy together.
Really?
Yeah. So like...
How weird.
Yeah, so like some lads... Yeah, and also, there's some lads in there who are really highly paid, and others who, let's put it mildly, are not very highly paid. And apparently, that's a bit of a division too. But I kind of also think there's a lot of sort of rumours flying around with Quins. No one really knows unless you're inside the camp.
Yeah.
No, I just think some of these guys are going to look back in a few years' time and. What were we doing?
Yeah, they're gonna...
We're professional rugby players with an opportunity to pull on that jersey and just behaving petulantly.
Yes, that's exactly it. They'll look back and think, what a waste of my, you know, two of my prime years with a great squad done the right way. That's exactly what they'll think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, disaster. Absolute disaster.
Gloucester managed to get that 5 points. 3 tries in the last 10 minutes.
Bloody Jason Woodward. Boy, what I like about Gloucester, right, is when they've got everyone fit, particularly in the backs, they're all a little bit special.
The two they cannot seem to get fit and not seem to get fit at the same time are probably two of their most talented players, and that's Woodward and Tom Marshall.
Mm. Yeah, you're right.
Those two... They're both so talented.
They've just got a load of X factor.
And I'll add that to probably their next or equally most talented player who cannot be fit is Trinder.
And Atkinson. I think Atkinson's a marvellous player.
He's at least more consistent with injuries, though.
He's about the early season with a hamstring, I think, and then...
But last few seasons, he's been available.
Yeah,
he's not a Trinder or a Marshall.
They walk a tightrope with their guys, like you say, they're... You can't rely on them to play
week in, week out. Yeah, certainly with those three.
Well, at least we confirm it's probably not their year this year.
No,
not this year.
Next year's looking very rosy.
Next year.
Yeah, next year. So this year, I mean, mathematically they can make top four. They're 3 points off Newcastle, who are currently in fourth place. It would be a big ask, particularly given the fixtures.
Yeah, they have to go to Saracens, is it?
Yeah, Saracens for the final day.
Yeah,
so that's going to be
it's not happening.
Nil points, but yeah, next year they want to be pushing for top four,
and they could be top four. They've definitely got the talent for it.
Yeah, and they've got the coaches for it now.
Yeah, Bath. Who saw the Bath game?
Yes,
I saw a bit of it.
Now,
just what? Seriously,
I tell you what, there are
so head scratcher.
Is it? I mean, if you look at Harlequins and you say they've done all the things the right way to get to where they are, you can then take Bath and say they have done all the wrong things in one season to get to where they are.
Well,
unfortunately, it's exactly the same place.
Yeah, they are both. They're in 8th and 9th position, albeit Bath are 10 points ahead of Harlequins in the league table.
You say they've done all the wrong things. Go on.
Well, Bruce Craig's installed his mates as the, you know, as the chief exec. They're signing players which don't fit the DOR's vision.
Who's signing the players is a question for me.
Yeah,
which is not only me asking that question. Because there have been some odd mid. I say odd. There's been a lot of mid-season signings.
But then when I got on a BT Sport game, I forget who Bath are playing at the Rec. Doesn't matter. And I said to Todd Blackadder, so the rumours of Lee Halfpenny, he was absolutely adamant. He said, that will not be happening. I don't know where these rumours are coming from. It will not be happening. So it sounded like he was certainly behaving like the man who was making the decisions.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I mean, it sounds, from what you've said, like definitely, actually. But, you know, there are other signings which don't really make much sense, isn't it? Like Jamie Roberts. I mean, Jamie Roberts is probably not a Todd Blackadder signing. And on the other side of that is losing Benny Tapps to Harlequins. Harlequins have got the much better side of that trade. Much better.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I think Jamie Roberts has been playing some good stuff for Quins most of this season.
But he's
season.
Older, isn't he? And,
yeah.
You know, for what?
And he's... When you've got guys like Rocco Degouni and Jonathan Joseph and Anthony Watson... outside your 12, You want to get them the ball.
Yes. Exactly right. It doesn't exactly fit what they're trying to do.
But then I would say that even if Rokodoguni was on the side, it was in their team, it wouldn't have made a huge amount of difference the way that they've been playing, because
it wouldn't.
They're so conservative in the way they play. Well, just kick the ball. They just kick it all the time. They have overlaps and kick it.
Yeah. I mean, just look at their recruitment. So their recruitment is one I always talk about, like all the mid-season signings, which, you know, apparently are out of necessity, but I don't see anyone else doing it.
But I'm calling it over and above the personnel. Just they're set up in a way they're never gonna do anything, because they just go out and kick the ball all the time. And I felt a little bit. I mean, on the one hand, that's what happens when you lose your head and attack coach early in the season, and also Todd Blackadder's mate and number two. That's a huge thing. And then the second thing, I felt sorry for the coaches today, because I don't think you can totally, I mean, other than being a little too conservative for my liking, I don't think you can lay all the, or even a huge chunk of the blame at the coach's door, because the amount of individual errors from those Bath players, brainless.
Like,
what
do you expect if you throw them all together? I mean, they're like a Barbarians team.
We are also, if we're just talking about this game in isolation, we're overlooking the very big factor that is an incredibly motivated Saracens team, who lost at the Rec earlier in the season.
Yeah, you're quite right.
And who had obviously dumped out of Europe a couple of weeks ago.
And at this point, had the result not gone their way, not guaranteed to get a top two.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. I don't think Bath were never going to get anything out of that game. They were never going to get a point out of that game.
No, that's true.
But they played even worse than they should have done.
Right, so here you go. I do not think that Todd Blackadder is going to get fired, nor should he get fired.
No.
I do think there's a fairly strong chance of him walking, though. Just walking away.
I think it's a possibility. I don't think he should. Well, no, I definitely don't think he should.
He's a good man. Quinns are a good club. He should walk out the door and go over to Quinns.
Into the snake pit.
Yeah.
You might as well go into South Wales.
Yeah, go and take over Ospreys. Enjoy it. Enjoy that.
What I want to see, the real thing for Bath, they've clearly got money to spend. Did either of you see the? Yeah, I'll come on to that in a second. Clearly got money to spend. I want Bath. I want Blackadder this summer to be spending some money and bringing some big names, and also some not some big names, but bring some guys in. Yeah, bring some guys that he wants, that he can manage, and build a squad playing in a certain style.
Yeah, and if you get it wrong, you get it wrong. And then you can be fired. But I don't think you can fire him for, you know, what's occurring now.
Yeah. What I was going to come on to was, did either of you see the news on the Bath Stadium, or the Stadium for Bath?
Oh, go on, no.
There was a kind of draft proposal put out this week, which was about a 90-page document, but I kind of flicked through the exec summary.
Has the person living in the buildings behind the Rec who was blocking it died yet? Is that what's happened?
It didn't mention
been
that.
Been overchecked.
There was a lot. So it didn't actually.
Topical JB.
Overchecked. It didn't actually say very much. It said it made all the right noises. It said everything that you'd want it to say, which is that this is a World Heritage site. It's got to be aesthetically sympathetic to the surrounding environment and the rich heritage of the city. But it didn't tell you how they're going to do that. It was just, here is a kind of very loose draft proposal of what they want to do for a stadium going forward.
Excellent. Well, the answer is you can't do it. Why should they do it? That's the other thing. Just double your ticket prices. I mean, if you think you can double your crowd sizes, don't bother. Just make the ticket prices a little bit more expensive. You don't have to have any extra security. There's no capital cost. You know, and the Bath lot look fairly well healed.
If you're living in Bath,
yeah, you're probably doing all right.
Maybe this is part of it, because
raise the ticket prices until crowds drop.
And going full circle, they're not bothering with any of this corporate rebranding. They're going, look, we've only got the old-fashioned, traditional rugby toffs.
Yeah, they've got the best stadium in the world. I mean, they actually have the best stadium in the world, right? I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, it should be such a privilege to go. They can charge 60 quid a ticket. You know, that's how it should be. Yeah, I thought you were going to mention something else when it comes to money. Did you see the the Saris. Table of Premiership teams which have lost money. Oh, of course, and Saracens lost their backer.
Well, yeah, well,
or Nigel Ray has purchased the other half of the club.
Has he actually bought it now?
Yeah.
I thought it was up for sale.
I believe so. Well, whether it's up for sale or not is kind of, it may well be, but he has acquired it off of the South African guys.
And he's looking for another investor.
Because they feel like they are going the right way to profitability.
Well, you say that.
They lost 2.68 million last year.
Yeah. Which I don't know off the top of my head what it was the year before. It feels like it is in the right direction.
Well, the crowds are growing, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Alliance Park seems to actually be feeling like a rugby stadium, though.
They're looking to build the stand that isn't been developed yet as well.
Yeah, so that seems to be going in the right kind of direction. I think that'd be a fairly attractive proposition.
Hmm.
Ultimately, the chairman have got to stop driving the clubs forward and let CEOs decide exactly how much to spend on wages and set the salary caps that way.
Hmm. Yeah, well, and this is there needs to be a little bit shrewder management, because when more money arrives, when money is available, when players become available, that money is just getting spent in the competition. The only thing that has gone up and up, because it's not profit, that's gone down and down, except for Exeter Chiefs, who should be commended for being the only profitable Avicii Rugby Club. The only thing that's gone up and up is the massive spiral upwards in player wages.
So, something which Steve Diamond said the other day.
Dimes.
Two things. Well, kind of three things, actually. One relating to squad size. Squad sizes in the Premiership are too big. If you have a big squad size and you're making them play contact in training, so on and so forth, you're going to get injuries. You need a big squad size. You lack cohesion, but it also costs you a fortune. Right, so Sale are built on a 15 and a 15 plus two extras.
32-man squad size.
That's it.
Which is small.
Dai Young said he's going to have a 39 squad next season.
39. Really?
So you get more consistency, so on and so forth. But interestingly, when pushed on the question about profitability, Sale very nearly broke even last year, which was staggering. This year they are the fourth or fifth most profitable club, or should I say the team?
Fourth or fifth least loss-making club.
Yes, exactly. But he said, how can this be right when the clubs are combined losing £22 million a year, but the RFU is making in excess of £125 million, and they are providing all the players and the services?
It's an interesting point,
isn't it?
Well, yeah, but also that's like shutting the stable door after the horse has bolted.
Go on.
Well, they've chose to spend that money knowing what the situation is. They've chose not to live within their means. And then saying when you're making a loss, oh, you've got a big pile of money there, I want some to make up for this money that I haven't spent very well.
Yeah.
It's a little bit. I mean, you're a man who believes in like market forces and capitalism. That's pretty poor.
I am with you for almost everything that you've said there, actually. But here's the other thing, and the clubs do have a good point. England don't own any of those players. All those players that make all that money, England don't own them. They do pay them. But ultimately, it's all for the clubs to develop them and bring them through. So they do have a point.
Well, yeah, they do. And maybe the compensation remuneration for
the clubs,
for the clubs, for when England players play for them, that's a negotiation that can happen.
Yeah, that would be an interesting, because I don't know, do the clubs get anything?
Yeah, they got all sorts of things, like academy credits.
Yeah, but the academy credits, is that not
players get 25 grand a game?
Yeah, the players get 25 grand a game. My understanding of the academy credits was that just gives them like additional headroom in the cap
cap. They're allowed to spend more of their own money.
Exactly,
they don't get cash back.
Yeah,
that's a good point actually. Yes, I don't know the answer. I'm sure they do get money from the RFU, though.
And do you know what? And in the close season, we can tie this all into a big conversation about the likely ring fencing scenario, which will be incoming in a couple of years, which will probably wrap up all of these different issues.
Yeah. The point you made before reminds me, and I reference this book. It's a really good book. I reference it quite frequently. Soconomics. If you've never read it, read it. It's probably a couple of years out of date. But one of the points they make in is professional football from the early 80s, or any point in history, to the 2000s, the turnover of clubs went up astronomically, from a few million pounds to hundreds of millions of pounds turnover per annum, The only thing that changed, none of the clubs became more profitable. The only thing that changed was player wages, followed the same trajectory as club turnover. It was described in that book as simply the most efficient money to most efficient way to funnel money to players.
Good
was the clubs, which is good. But if there are Premiership clubs which are now going back to rugby Premiership rugby clubs which are consistently losing money to the overall detriment of their owners, that's not a good thing, because that can't be a sustainable solution.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think many football clubs are profitable.
They're not. They're not.
With the exception of United. But, dude, United have 700 people working here.
Yeah.
700 people work for Manchester United.
And actually, that's probably permanent staff, because on match days, they'll get in all sorts of agency caterers and agency staff. But Soccernomics does make another interesting point around that, which is, so no one who owns a football club, a rugby club, is independently wealthy through that club.
Yes.
They all have peripheral businesses, which are the main drivers of their wealth. And there's a kind of tangential link between owning a sports club and the profitability of the businesses, the peripheral businesses, because everyone wants to do business with the owner of Man United. Everyone wants to do business if you own Sarah, like, or certain people want to do business with you.
Or you can't lock up an oligarch if he owns Chelsea.
Yeah, that's another
instance. That is a scenario.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh well.
So, we might be reading into the negative profitability of rugby clubs a little bit too much. But I don't know. And the South African selling Saracens kind of, it does suggest there's an issue there.
Which club would you most want to buy?
Oh, I could see myself living in Bath.
I could see Bath being a nice club to buy. I think I'd go and buy RGC, obviously. And I think I'd also buy Oldham Rugby League. I'm not far off the wealth needed to buy Oldham Rugby League.
I frequently, every time I go back and do a Bath game, I think I've done my life back to front so far, because I bought my first house in Bath.
Did you?
And
settled in Manchester.
And and I'd never, and it was kind of, it wasn't the right time. It was, people used to come and stay with me, and just, we got taken to town. They go, "Oh, this is gorgeous, it's beautiful, look how lovely this is." I was like, but it wasn't really, I'd never lived in a big city, and it wasn't the right time. Manchester called, and I've had a great time here. But I can see myself settling down in Bath, yeah.
If I'm. Maybe retiring in Bath.
So you're both going to buy Bath?
We're both going to buy. Well, yeah, we're bidding war.
We'll form a consortium, Tim.
Yeah,
and then we can buy Bath.
Yes. Only absolute chances for consortium.
Yeah. Right. Maybe one thing that can lead on from we're having talked about the Sale Newcastle game. Gary Graham, the player that Eddie Jones noticed, was on show at Kingston Park. Potential summer tourists on Eddie Jones's plane.
John O'Ross.
Yeah, as was reported, John O'Ross is on Eddie Jones's radar.
Yeah.
Big time.
John O'Ross, who has only been in the country for 9 months or 10 months, something like that.
Yeah.
And has an English grandmother.
Yeah.
Was apparently the first English-speaking captain of the...
That's amazing.
...the Blue Bulls.
That is absolutely amazing.
Because he's not Afrikaans.
He will also if he becomes an English international, the most African English international... of all time as
he
well.
He is incredibly African. I mean, there's just no other word for it. Him and Faf are incredibly African.
Tough cookie.
Oh, yeah.
He's a
actually, Faf isn't that African, actually. Not compared to John O'Ross.
What about Mike Catt? He was pretty African.
Again, not compared to
South African.
Yeah, not compared to John O'Ross. I mean, it's just that look of intense seriousness.
Just menace, yeah. Total
menace.
Yeah.
Yeah,
menace mixed with a bit of arrogance.
Well, I did say it's not the season. I think that if Springboks were going to be picking players from abroad, he would definitely be in there, definitely be in the mix. And it doesn't surprise me that it's with the Springboks change of policy, which has made the RFU decide. Do you know what? We'll do something here because he's a fine player.
Well, made Eddie decide.
Yeah,
yeah.
He really is a fine player.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. Is do England need him? I don't know. It sort of makes me worried that suddenly John O'Ross is going to jump in and leapfrog Don Armand.
What does he do? I mean, that's what he kind of sort of asks. And you've made an interesting point. He's very similar to Oh, who's the boy you meant that, for Leicester?
He's a better version of Mike Williams. He's the player that about three seasons ago or two seasons ago I thought Mike Williams could be. But then Don Armand is possibly the player that I... Yeah, I think Don Armand's a bit more athletic, and rangy.
Having had the pleasure of interviewing Don Armand, right,
yeah,
and speaking to him subsequent to that, the only thing I would say is he's far, far too nice. Like, he's actually one of the nicest men. Not that these other guys aren't nice, but he's, like, lovably nice. He's, like, approachable. You don't really get that with... maybe with John and Ross, who's absolutely fine, but he's not that kind of guy. And I wonder,
lovably nice, but then he'll also go and batter Montpellier's brutes for 18 minutes.
So the reason I'm mentioning this is, do you remember when Tamana Harrison was first brought into the squad? And the reason was basically his attitude and abrasiveness.
So abrasive.
Yeah, so abrasive. And I think it's the attitude as much as the physical endeavour which Eddie wants.
Well, on that front, someone else that was mentioned in the back row, potentially, and again, African origins, Michael Rhodes, back for Saracens today. But I think that's the sort of player I would like Eddie Jones to be looking at, from the point of view that he has massive defensive work, puts in some of the biggest hits that I've seen, Michael Rhodes, but he has these basketball-esque ball-playing ability.
The offloading.
I think that's the mould of player that I'm...
He's so athletic, isn't he? He goes up in the lineup. He's a great player, Michael Woods.
Yeah.
But again, is he...
It's amazing, some of these boys that haven't been capped by South Africa.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And it's not... it's kind of lucky, isn't it, that South Africa are double world champions and have an amazing national team, or you'd think that this is criminal.
Gary Graham, maybe he'll get on the plane. Joe Simmons, possibly. That's an outside bet to go to be taken away to have a close look at. Eddie Jones does like to look at people, but maybe that's more of a training camp rather than a tour.
Yeah, I think Joe Simmons, it feels too early to me.
Yeah, Tommy Taylor, again, he's not even back, so I don't think it will happen.
Well, he played.
Yeah, I know, but yeah. He's only.
He needs a season of rugby, doesn't he?
He does. The one that I'm going to call... partly because Jonathan Joseph was out, but I had this scribbled down anyway because Jonathan Joseph is out of form. Joe Marchant is looking good.
Yeah. He's been in various different squads for a couple of years now, but never made that extra step.
So I tell you a guy who I'd have on the plane. So two older fellas. They're not for the future. They're purely for the next World Cup.
Yeah,
that's all I care about.
Yeah, and given that we are building, less than 18 months away.
Yeah, building for the future is basically means that you've already failed, right? You've got an inbuilt excuse.
For the next game.
So Brad Barrett, I've spoken about at length. He has to come in at 12. He is just the best 12 that England can find at the moment to do that. The other one, Hooker, they need a little bit more depth. Cameron Dickey's very, very good. Occasionally misses his arrows. I tell you who doesn't miss many arrows and who is a much better scrimmager, probably, almost definitely actually, is Rob Webber.
Webber
is playing very well.
Yeah.
He carries well. Yeah, I know he's not the most athletic shape. He hits his line outs.
They've got a lot of options at hooker.
Well, they've got two at the moment.
Hartley, George, Cowan Dickey, Tom Dunn's been in the squad, Tommy Taylor's been in the squad, Buchanan and Gray, I wouldn't go bother with those. I'd say who disappointed me, that he showed some real promise early days at Newcastle, but since he's been at Leicester, hasn't done anything. McGuigan.
Yeah, it's
George McGuigan.
Has he not been injured?
He's not been injured for the past 18 months consistently, has he?
No.
I've seen him play games, fair. I've not seen him.
And he's actually down the pecking order now as well.
Yeah,
he's got
Pelotonau and Youngs. He needs to get out there.
Pelotonau's been looking better than Youngs, I've got to say. I'd start him if it was.
Pelotonau's been a great signing.
Everyone you speak to just talks about how strong he is.
Mm. Yeah.
Immensely strong man. I think I would give Rob Webber a serious look because he's a grizzled veteran. Might not win you a game, but he's not going to lose you a game. And you could argue that Cowan Dickey could win you a game. But you also look at his darts for...
They're good.
They weren't good. In Island, were
no,
they?
No, but...
I mean, you need to win a World Cup, Tim. That's what you need to do. You won pressure game.
Well, Rob, he's the first choice in the English champions and his arrows are pretty tidy there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look,
Webber was also in the last World Cup squad, wasn't he?
He was. And that went well.
Nah, Tommy Taylor's your man. By the World Cup, he'll be back. It'll be Tommy Taylor will be Tommy Taylor will be in the World Cup.
Yeah,
I think Rob Webber might have. Did Hartley travel to the World Cup, or was it?
Hartley, full stop.
Youngs, George, and Webber.
It might have been actually.
And I think Webber jumped over Jamie George.
He was very good for Bath.
Yeah,
have a look at the Uruguay game, England v Uruguay, when they played all the backups.
Yeah, I'm gonna have a look now.
And that was the worst game in English history for me, because not only were they out, they were out, but they tried to put on a show, and it was just cringeworthy.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing riding on it. It was like. It's like a funeral wake.
And it was... I hosted the...
Yeah, Rob Webber was number two.
Was he? I hosted the fan zone in Manchester City Centre. Bearing in mind, we know how little Manchester gives a damn about rugby.
Yeah.
Not at all. This is like a big deal. We've got these players down, these internationals. We've got all this stuff going on, all these free activities. And trying to sell this day to Mancunian locals strolling by. Yeah, we're out. There's a game just up the road. It'll be great. Yeah, rubbish.
Yeah, and people had bought some of those tickets for a lot of money as well, and they were going for like 50p on StubHub or wherever it was the day before. Ugh.
And I can tell you, if you've looked at Japan, I've been doing a bit of digging and a bit of looking around, and Japan is very, very, very expensive to travel to. And to travel around in, and to
we've got stay. Our tickets. We're already booked.
You're all going.
Yeah, yeah. We're,
have you seen how much Japan costs?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. We're following you, Team USA.
Yeah,
it's very expensive, but you can get rail. It's like 400 quid for a rail pass, I think, for unlimited rail.
It's going to be interesting.
I think you're going to end up staying in one of those little compartment
things.
Little put yourself in a drawer
and eating instant noodles for 3 weeks.
Yeah. Can't wait. I mean, that's what we eat anyway, so it's not a big deal.
There's an interesting article about the Japanese sex industry in The Economist last week.
Yes, there was.
I sent to you
on a totally unrelated point.
Apparently, it's dying out. The actual intercourse element is dying out, but people want companionship.
What?
It's so sad.
Yeah,
it makes me so sad reading it.
Yeah, there's an element of Japanese society which just basically turned into hermits now. Like, it's a real problem. Like, I can't remember exactly what demographic is, but it's something like young men or growing up locking themselves in their flats and literally never coming out.
Kind of living online, and
that is them done.
Yeah.
Oh, what a happy thought. Right. Where are we at?
Well, you're going to talk about Cornerstone, and then we're going to talk about next week's games.
Yes, well, the semi-finals of the Champions Cup and the Challenge Cup, absolutely. So Cornerstone, the best razor we believe you can get, and you have an amazing deal because you listen to the Egg Chasers podcast. We can do for you something very special, and that is give you not just your first order of Cornerstone for just £4, less than a pint, £4 for a cartridge of six razors delivered in a Cornerstone presentation box straight to your door, but we can also make sure you get your free engraved aluminium shaft, your initials on it or whatever else you want on it, all for £4 for your first order. No obligation. We think you'll love it and want to continue. However, they've got loads of other gubbins and goodies you can go and check out. But if you want your weighty aluminium shaft engraved with your initials, if you want your razors for £4, go to cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. That's cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers or
Egg10 at checkout.
And
sorry.
Go on.
I've just looked on Twitter, and someone has very cleverly gone out there and searched for a trademark for Bristol Bears, which is owned by Bristol Sports Limited.
Who are Bristol Rugby?
Who are Bristol Rugby?
Interesting. There you go.
There you go. It's happening. Here is a quick break.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
That was an interesting break.
It was a great break. It was great one of our break. Best breaks.
As they go, that's strong.
I really enjoyed my time off there.
Yeah, agreed.
But we're back to talk about the European semi-finals. What's happening in the Challenge Cup? Gloucester v. Ooh. Newcastle. Oh, no. Newcastle v. Gloucester or Gloucester v. Newcastle? Gloucester v. Newcastle.
You're firing too many things at me. Give me 1 second. Gloucester host Newcastle.
Yes, that's
there
right.
There we go. And Cardiff Blues host Section Paloise.
Now, it's Pau. It seems ridiculous because there's a potential trophy on the line, so I think both these sides will go for it. But with the state of play in domestic rugby as it
is,
we've seen what Leinster did with their side this week in the league.
Leinster always do that.
But it's Newcastle are going to have an away game at Leicester following this weekend, but they're going to go for it, aren't they? Come on, they've got six games left this season.
Business end of the season, Newcastle will go for this.
So, just going back to Leinster a second, right? I just had a thought. They basically threw away a league game against Treviso.
Well, they didn't think they were throwing away a league game, but there's a few different angles to this because they've now got another. So let's say there was five players who'd never started. That's probably wrong, but let's say they had five players in that team who'd never started a Pro 14 game. They've got five more players who are a little bit more experienced and a little bit more used to playing that level of rugby.
Yeah.
So there's always an aspect with Leinster that they are always developing the young talent.
There is that, okay, and that is absolutely great. I just kind of think, when did playing a game of rugby become such a major inconvenience for rugby teams? I mean, like, if there was a game before, it's like, yeah, we'll just scrap that completely. I mean, that's your primary job, is to put out a good team week in, week out. And the other thing as well, like, this would never happen to a French club, because playing at home is like a prideful thing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of missing.
Yeah, and maybe they've gone slightly too far in the balance in developing youth. I can't help but feel in a game like that, particularly against a team like your beloved Benetton at home, there is an element of arrogance that will get corrected going forward. It's a tough one because I really recognise the need to keep players fresh, particularly at this time of the season when half of Leinster's best players have also played a full Six Nations.
Yeah, but they're so well looked after.
But you can be as well looked after as you like. I remember playing at this time of the season, and like just repeat injuries to ankles or repeat injuries to like thumbs. I remember like being unable to open drinks bottles at one point in the season, and you just need a couple of weeks. All it takes is a couple of weeks of not having contact at training, not having contact at game, and it'll heal. But because you're just getting bashed over and over and over again.
And that's the other thing, that the gains are made in pre-season, and the objective of the season, conditioning-wise, is to lose the least amount of conditioning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because maintenance is the objective. You're not trying to grow and get stronger.
Because you get weaker through the season.
Yeah.
So, rehab sounds horrific. It sounds like the worst part of being a rugby player.
Yeah, I've done a few.
A lonely pre-season is basically what it is.
Yeah.
You and the physio. You rock up. It's you and the physio. Maybe a couple of other. Particularly because I've had some injuries that have been like 4, 5, 6 months. And you start off being able to do absolutely bugger all. And you slowly. And you see like other players come into rehab for like 3 weeks. Hamstring, 4 weeks. Ankle injury, 3 weeks. And you're there 2 months after they've come, gone, back playing.
It's horrible.
The only worst place to be, and I don't know if clubs still do, I'm sure clubs must still do this, but fat club.
Yeah.
where you just have extra condition, you just get come in and sit on a bike for an hour and then go and do all the other training that everyone else is doing.
I need to go to fat club. There's no choice about that.
Yeah, you're getting a pull-up bar, you'll be fine.
Exactly. Just one last little gem from Diamond. I like that pun. That could be like a weekly feature. Diamonds, gems.
Please no.
Sale have not sustained a training ground injury this season because they don't do contact in order to avoid this this thing which is getting injured.
So I'm a big fan of doing very very limited contact in training. Very limited. When you do it. Do it once every 2 or 3 weeks. Do it game intensity and nothing else.
Yeah,
because so, I almost think there's no point doing kind of 80% contact.
Yeah, so the guy who is in charge of developing Welsh coaches now, Phil Davis, that is his new job, quality assurance throughout Wales coaching, I think, something like that. He says do contact, but in very short bursts.
Yeah.
No more than 5 minutes.
Very short. You want it game intensity because there's no point. Putting in a tackle at 80% intensity is like nothing you'll do in a game.
Yeah.
You're not preparing, it's not match preparation.
I actually disagree with that. I think that players, I see why professional players don't do it, because they're professionals, and to get to a professional level, you've already nailed tackling. I mean, that's pretty important.
H is a completely different ballgame.
You need to know how to get your shoulder in position. If it's 80% or 70% or 60%.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm talking about
But like, boys. Leicester's Tigers still do the Tuesday morning session, do they not? Isn't that famous, the Tuesday morning fight? Yeah. Free for all.
Yeah. Yeah. I one thing, just from my own experiences of playing in the past, the best coaches all did one thing, and you can talk about the physical intensity of sessions, but they would always go, right, the objective of this session is this, and we'll be here for 50 minutes, or we'll be here for 75 minutes, and it was never a minute more.
Do you know what?
It was always like short, hard, but when they say done, they're done. And the bad coaches drag on and on
I've had some awful coaches. Well, do you know what? Actually, I do appreciate people saying that. They say this is our objective, and when we've achieved it, we'll go in. But one of the best coaches that I had, right, used to say that all the time, and he used to say as an incentive, yeah, we'll get in nice and early and go home. It's like, no, I'm here because I like it. making me go home early isn't the intention. I want to play for as long as we can play for.
I remember having a session on that where you have like, we're going to be 45 minutes, short and sharp, kind of on the nose, not a minute over. I'm having one and it was with Andy Northey was coaching us at the time, and we were getting battered in National One. Andy Northey was former St. Helens, former Northampton centre. He's a good coach. But we were getting battered. We'd lost like 8 on the bounce. And he said, right, we're going to be doing 200 metre shuttles. And he split them so you'd be doing either...
Oh, 200 metre, not 200 metres.
No, 200 metre shuttles. 200 metre... So like, over and over and over again.
What?
So you'd either do, and you'd change it every time, so it'd either be the length of the pitch and back, halfway back 4 times, or 22 and back 8 times.
Why?
So we set off not knowing how many we were doing. We get to 10, thinking, all right, that's kind of last one. And then he keeps us going. We ended up doing 27 number 200 metre shuttle runs. And you started off because there's like the competitive edge, like everyone's going fast. By the end of it, people are just like almost crawling. It's like a 2 minute 200 metres by the end of it.
Broughton Park did a pre-season, this pre-season actually, I think, or last pre-season, and they basically got them on a tiny little like all-weather pitch, and they jogged around the outside of the pitch. And jog, and then occasionally the coaches say, right, you go turn left, so you'd be constantly turning left.
Yeah.
And then the coach would say, right, when you get to the far corner, go diagonal, and then you've got a sprint. And then when you get to where you're going, go right. So then you just go, it's just a change of direction, right? Mindless running. But we're sprinting in, and we're doing it for 5 minutes. Which turned into 7 minutes, which turned into 12 minutes, which turned into 21 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, it was half an hour's worth of just jogging, sprinting, jogging, sprinting.
I wonder if some of that's like a bit of a mental test, because it reminded me of a mate of mine who was a soldier for a bunch of time. He he said that one of the things they used to do, they'd put on their Bergens, all weighted up, fully suited up, and they'd go for a whatever run. They'd be hanging out their ass, and then they'd get back to what they thought was the finish, only to be told, right, we're going again.
Yeah.
And they went off, and loads of them were like, cry, like just thinking, I'm going to cry. I can't take this.
I can't do it.
But actually, they got them over the hill, just out of sight, and then there was a truck waiting for them that picked them all up. But what it was testing the people that gave up and said no before they set off on the second run. Because some of them would have gone, no, I'm not going.
Have you ever seen the army thing? It's an old school thing. I doubt that they still do it, but it's hilarious to test a mental fortitude. They lie a guy on the floor, right? And they start up a truck engine, and the guy's blindfolded. And the truck is right next to your head, right? But they run your head over with an empty tyre, and you just got to trust them. And you don't know what's happening. You just say to the truck, don't move! Don't move! Don't move!
It's coming! It's coming!
The truck's coming, you've got this. and the other thing, my good army friend told me, Simon, in work, ex Royal Artillery, he said when you warming up the boys, get them into a big circle, tell them to face left so they're all facing each other's backs, kind of thing, and the warm up is you got to slap the guy's head who's in front of you as like you run round. So, like, you just end up sprinting around because everyone's trying to, like, slap everyone else's head.
But everyone's sprinting at the same time.
It gets very quick, very, very, very quickly.
In a world of HIA. So, I think, in summary, Gloucester to win.
Yeah, Gloucester to win, and then Cardiff host Pow.
Come on, Pow.
Pow, Pow, Pow,
which,
Pow,
which
Pow.
Which is, someone corrected us on Twitter and said it's Poe, it's pronounced Poe, not Pow.
Oh, get over it.
I know, but I like saying Pow.
Yeah.
Pow, Pow, Pow.
Pow, Pow. Oh, it's Pearl. Yeah, great. Pearl hopefully will win, and Gloucester maybe, who knows.
I think the English side is going to win the tournament.
Probably.
Yep. Now, the big events.
Yes. So, Saturday, 21st of April. 3:30 kickoff.
Yep.
In the Avicii Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
In Dublin, Leinster host Scarlets. In a repeat of last year's Pro 12 semi-final.
I think Scarlets will rip Leinster to pieces.
Interesting.
I think Leinster have come across English sides who are easy to beat in terms of you know what their game plan's going to be, and if your game plan works, you will beat their game plan.
So if you front up,
correct,
you can stop it. Like they did to Exeter in the end,
yeah,
when we saw it.
Yeah, defending against Scarlets is like defending, you know, against oncoming water. Like you just can't stop it. It's completely different. I think that will. I think that they'll just simply outscore them, and they'll score fast and early.
Did you see the Edinburgh Scarlets game this weekend?
I know, but I heard the Scarlets lost.
52-14.
Bloody yeah, hell. Again,
it was a complete second team.
The Scarlets second team is not a Leinster second team.
But it's weird, isn't it, about the Scarlets? Because their first team shouldn't really be winning Pro 14. I mean, actually, that isn't fair. The starting 15 is very, very good.
Yeah, the starting 15.
But I guess it's
front row internationals. Entire of the backs are internationals. Yeah. I mean, the pack that aren't internationals are. Well, James Davis is now. Shingler is now.
Ty Burn will be.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's not fair. I guess what I was trying to say there is it's as much about the system as it is about the players.
I'd agree with that.
Now, in terms of packs, undoubtedly Leinster on paper have a massive advantage. But what I learned about the Scots is how streetwise their forwards are. They're incredibly streetwise. And that will probably see them through. If they can just get parity in. You know, in the tough areas, I think they'll rip them to pieces.
Do we know if the Aviva's sold out? Because when we went to watch Exeter...
Busy, but not sold out.
It was...
half full?
I'd say not half full. I'd say...
Wow.
It's 52,000 stadium, maybe 20,000 at the most.
Mm.
Mm. No, I have no idea if it's sold out or not.
Because that would be a big thing.
I can't see parity being achieved up front, in spite of Scarlett's being, as you say, extremely good. Not only do Leinster also have an international front row, they also have an international front row to back up their international front row.
That is fair.
And I think and behind that, they probably have a third choice international front row.
They do have three international hookers, yeah?
Strauss, Cronin,
and oh, maybe not.
Probably someone else.
The point is, they're very, very good.
Yeah.
They are very, very good.
And they have strength and depth in every single position. They have strength and depth.
However, as you say, Scarlets can take so much confidence from
last year.
From last year.
They know how to beat them.
Yeah.
I think the Premiership style really suits the way that Leinster play. But I think I back Leinster against almost anyone else.
Yeah.
The difference this year is, so Scarlets won the Pro 12 with the last seven games of the season. So coming back from Six Nations, they played pretty much their strongest team every game, and they built up an incredible amount of momentum, and they won seven on the bounce to win the whole thing.
Yes.
The nature of this time round, with them balancing Europe and domestic rugby,
yeah,
is they're changing their players up, and Leinster are kind of used to that. Scarlets aren't, and you saw there was rustiness in that performance against La Rochelle.
Yeah, there was, because everyone's fearful of playing their... I mean, I would have played a full-strength Athletic team, a Scarlets team,
this weekend,
getting ready for that game.
Mm.
And if you have some injuries, that's just the cost of doing business.
So I am less worried about that, because as we've said before, basically the back line played together anyway. They played together all Six Nations, bar one or two others.
Yeah.
I am less worried about that, but I do think Leinster, I think they weren't surprised.
Tom Bondell played for Scarlets again, did he?
Scored, yeah, against Edinburgh.
Tom, imagine that, Tom Bondell, European Cup winner for the Leinster Scarlets.
I think Leinster weren't surprised in last year's semi-final, but perhaps no one really expected Scarlets to be able to do it as consistently as they clearly can do it. And I think Leinster will have learnt from that. And they've got a lot more game tape now on just how Scarlets play at the top level.
Yeah.
So I think I don't know how they're going to do it, but I think they'll make Scarlets less effective.
Interesting. So I would love to know what the analysts make of Scarlets and how they're going to slow down. Because there's an answer to it somewhere.
Oh, yeah. There will be. And Stuart Lancaster's the man to figure it out.
Yeah, big Stu. He'll work it out.
So what are you saying, Tim?
I'm saying Leinster.
I'm saying Leinster.
By 8.
Yeah, I could go with that. Leinster by a score.
I think this game is not going to be... It's going to be by much more than a score either way, because there's going to be so many points scored. And I think they're going to be mostly Scarlets points. In fact, they're going to, yes, the majority of the points scored in this game will be scored by the Scarlets, making them mathematically the winner.
As Michael Owen would say, the team that scores the most goals usually win.
Yeah, that's exactly right, except for own goals.
If it was at the Principality Stadium, for example, I think I might go with Scarlets, but
yeah,
the Dublin factor I think is going to be worth 10.
They won the Pro 12.
10 points.
They won the Pro 12 in Dublin.
Yes, they did. I'm just saying, I think that's going to be worth between 5 and 10 points on the day, which will make the difference.
I'm with you.
So, they will be playing in the final, if it goes the way we say. Well, the winner of that game will play.
Racing 92, who host Munster. Mm. And so, someone pointed this out recently. We've not seen Racing 92 be given their full name for a while.
Which is Dan Carter.
Dan Carter's Racing 92. Obviously, he's leaving at the end of the season, but he's still playing, albeit mostly on the bench behind Lombie.
So, do you think it's not called Dan Carter's Racing 92 anymore because he's just fallen out of favour a bit?
I think the drink driving issue last year saw him fall out of a favour with a few people. Yeah,
that's a small problem.
Including JLR, Jaguar Land Rover.
Yeah, I also think that he's too intoxicating, isn't he, to the to the rugby pundits, and even when he comes on now from the bench, you look on Twitter and it's like, oh, he just oozed class.
Yeah.
And I love what they say, he oozed class.
No one ever says, by the way, no one ever says, even the most flair player you can think of, no one ever says, all kicked with his cultured right foot. It's only ever a cultured left foot, isn't it?
Yeah,
absolutely.
That is very, very, that is very, very true.
He's all consuming for pundits.
Yeah, yeah.
They can't talk about anything else when he's on the pitch.
No, it's weird.
It was like when Sam Burgess.
Exactly, exactly.
Oh, look at that classy pass. It was forward.
In fairness, Dan Carter has had like 15 years of being the best 10 in the world.
Mm.
Or he had 10 years of that, 15 years of being the best 10 in the world. Sam Burgess was getting it after 2 minutes. He's getting it before he'd even played a game of rugby union.
Yes, that is true.
Good clear out there from Sam Burgess.
Amazing big Sam.
Good decoy run from Sam Burgess.
Those decoy
as
runs.
As Banahan streaks on an 80-metre run to score.
Let's go back and look at the decoy.
So, this is in Bordeaux.
They are so enormously massive.
Racing 92.
Yeah, I can't see them not winning it.
And they've got some serious talent.
They've got
the combination of kind of intelligent halfbacks in Machinot and Lambie, the enormous pack, and some unbelievable individual brilliance from players like Nakarawa and Vakatawa.
Yeah, and Dominic Ryan. Is it Dominic Ryan?
Donica Ryan.
Donica Ryan. Who's Dominic Ryan? Doesn't matter.
Donica Ryan, who's someone that adds the dog and the steel to that pack.
They are a lovely combination, those two.
Nakarawa
and Ryan. I mean, they're completely different.
Yeah, yeah. But absolute chalk and cheese.
Really.
And then, so we've got all the names. We've got one of the most expensive squads ever assembled in the world in Racing 92. And then we've got Munster, who are one of the best team units, one of the best organised and closest knit bunches of players.
I wonder how many fans will travel. I mean, I'm guessing a lot.
A lot. A hell of a lot.
Hmm.
In fact, to the point where I wouldn't be surprised if it was close to 50-50 or even more Munster.
Yeah, the prisons have never really taken rugby to heart.
And don't travel at all. So,
just like the good players from any French team don't travel, not playing away.
Yeah.
So quite a funny observation. The French prop, he's not French prop at all. The Racing prop, who's massive.
Ben Tamé Fifanou, or
yeah,
whatever he's called.
He can only get up when he's been knocked down by rolling onto his stomach. That's an actual thing.
It's like a turtle.
Yeah. He has to roll over to get up.
Who's going to win then?
I think Racing will. I would like Racing to win, not because Munster wouldn't be a great story, but just to keep that European feel, which has been what I've really liked about this year. Is there's been a real European feel to the whole tournament.
Well, the resurgence of Scarlets has helped massively.
Scarlets has helped with that. A Welsh team in it and French teams in it, English teams. Well,
it's a lot to do with the Pro 12, Pro 14 becoming a much better product over the last few years. Much better product.
But interestingly, it's still one which does enable teams to get the best out of Europe. I don't mean that in a critical way at all, but you've had teams like Leinster have done this weekend and before previous games. They have been able to rotate their squad to a degree that is less possible in the Avicii, and it's less done certainly in the top 14.
And you've got real quality squads, like Glasgow, for instance. I mean, an amazing squad.
And you've got Southern Kings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, just have a look at the pool, the group that the Treviso are in. They've won 10 games. I think the next one down is the Kings or the Dragons, and they've won 2 games.
Yeah. You
know, it's a huge
and you've got Zebre.
Zebre, Dragons, Kings.
So I completely agree, and it's not denigrating the competition. It has been excellent, but you still can balance your resources reasonably well.
If you're smart, you will do. Yeah.
Steve Diamond, 15 plus 15 plus 2.
He's a maths guy as well.
No, maths guy, there you go.
So what were you saying? Racing.
Well, so I was going to go with Racing. Then I thought, yeah, they're not going to travel too well.
I'm actually tempted by Munster. Yeah. Purely based on
that
fact.
Go. This is what Munster will not be used to. Be facing a scrum half better than their own. And I think Machinode is the best scrum half in the world. And that is going to be a massive problem for them.
He's one that's close. Yeah. It's a good. It's an interesting point, that. There's not many better than Conor Murray, and Machinode is...
probably the one.
One of the very few. Machinode, Aaron Smith.
Mm.
And even Aaron Smith, I don't see it myself. But I love TJ Perenara so much, and he can't oust Aaron Smith. So there must be something that... And Aaron Smith, even after his infamous incident in a disabled toilet in a hotel lounge, they can't get rid of him because he's that good. So there must be something there. Right, give me Munster by 3 points.
Wow! And you'll go Munster as well, AJ?
I was going to go with Racing. Racing by 5.
Wow. Okay, so bring it on. When are the two games? One Saturday, one Sunday?
Saturday at 3:30, Sunday 3:15.
Bring it on.
There we go.
Oh, amazing. I love it.
Oh, and I'm in Valencia.
Without any way to pay for rugby, no, even though you're paying whatever is required.
I will pay so much money to watch these. Hopefully one of the BT Sport games I'll be able to watch.
When are you going?
Friday night.
When are you back?
Monday night.
How are we going to podcast?
Damn it.
Well, it's all right.
We'll sort it. I'll phone in. They've got Wi-Fi.
We'll manage. We'll just get Dimes in.
Should I get a guest?
Let's get Dimes. Dimes couldn't fill my chair, Tim.
We'll think on that one. To be confirmed.
I'll see what Tom Cruise is doing next week.
Someone with European pedigree or flavour might be interesting.
Leave it with me. See what I can do.
Yes. Right. Thanks for listening. Subscribe. All the rest of it. You know what you're doing anyway. Now, if you got to this point, you don't need us to tell you what to do. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.